The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.
Love. Courage. Truth. Glenn Beck.
He did this in the name of ISIS. That's the Deputy Commissioner of Intelligence and Counterterrorism for the NYPD. The disturbing details of how Saipov, the Uzbek immigrant turned terrorist, planned and executed his attack is becoming very clear. And it needs to become clear to all of us that times are changing. The narrative gives us a frightening look inside of the mind of a cold-blooded and calculated killer. Saipov had been planning his attack on Manhattan, the West Side bike path, for a year. We still don't know when or how long he had been radicalized, but for any new and aspiring ISIS recruit, getting instruction from the caliphate is actually pretty easy. You just pull up an app on your phone and log into the internet. Both ISIS and Al-Qaeda give instructions and directions online that acts as some sort of demented University of Phoenix for terrorists. I hope we're monitoring that. Several months ago, ISIS began telling their followers to stop coming to Syria and to Iraq. They could be more effective by staying in their home countries. ISIS began directing their soldiers to use vehicles as weapons in order to stay off the radar of law enforcement. Saipov took this instruction and made the decision around September to use a truck. On October 4th, he searched online for a Home Depot store in New Jersey. He noted a location that rented trucks and continued his preparation. On the 18th of last month, he began looking for the best spot to execute his attack. He wanted to inflict the maximum amount of casualties, but not just any people would do. He wanted to make a statement. He looked up Halloween in New York City. You can only imagine what he saw as he clicked through image after image of trick-or-treaters walking down the West Side path. He chose specifically this location with hopes that children would be killed. He rented a practice truck on October 22nd. He began making his dry runs on October 28th. He scoped the target location one last time. He was ready. He carried a stun gun, three knives, just in case he lived long enough to use them. He originally planned on hanging two ISIS flags on the front and the back of the truck, but changed his mind the last minute. He didn't want to risk attracting attention before entering the walkway. Inside the truck, police found a handwritten note, both Arabic and English. It read, "No God, but God and Muhammad as his prophet. Islam will endure." We are entering a new era in the war on terror, where people can be radicalized, taught, and instructed from the comfort of their own home anywhere in the world. They're smart, they're calculating, and they are devoted. The terrorists have evolved. The question is, can we stop arguing with one another long enough to evolve to stop them?
It's Thursday, November 2nd. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Prominent Islamic reformer, the Imam Mohammad Tahiri, claims now he repeatedly warned Bill de Blasio, the mayor of New York City, about Islamic terror hotbeds and the potential oncoming attacks starting years ago, but has been continuously ignored. Quote, "About the New York City terrorist attack, I personally sent letters to Mayor de Blasio online and in person about terrorists breeding in New York. He did nothing." Now, this is a guy who was born in Iran. He's a Muslim reformist. He said, "I sent Bill de Blasio an alarming letter through his website. Then I sent it to his office, and my employee approached Bill de Blasio's people in person. He's part of the problem. He knows where the extremist organizations in New York City are. Can he deny it? He can't deny. So what has he done so far? Nothing. He said about Bill de Blasio, now you classify this as an act of terror? There are terrorist breeding centers in New York City. I wrote you last year, but you did nothing. Sad. It's almost like Donald Trump wrote that. Sad. The counterterrorism expert who dubs himself the Imam of Peace. He's a known reformer. He is a guy who is on a constant state of alert. He said the mayor and the left's propensity to deny reality that Islamic extremism exists. My legal team will write letters and we will release them tomorrow. We just were on the phone with Imam Tahidi. He is in Australia now. So it is in the middle of the night, or it's 6 p.m. I can't remember what time it is, but it's not a convenient time for him to talk. He'll be on with us next week to talk about this. He is friends with Ayaan Hirsi Ali, who is one of the bravest women alive today. This is the kind of stuff that causes the Bubba effect. And I believe that what the media doesn't understand and what many people in America don't understand is Donald Trump, his presidency, is part of the Bubba effect. Yeah. We know what he's doing wrong, but what have you been doing? Is that not the Bubba effect? Remember, this is something that came to me through special forces when Bush was president. I asked them when I was, you know, at the head of special forces, and I was talking to them casually, and I said, "So what keeps you up at night?" And they said, "Not the same stuff that keeps you up at night." And I said, "What is it?" And they said, "Something called the Bubba effect. I'd never heard of it." They said, "That's when the people start to turn on the government. And that's what we're really preparing for, is when," and remember, this is probably 2005, maybe. And it just didn't even occur to me that that could be true. He said, when people start to turn on the government, because we believe what will happen is Washington will pussyfoot around. And they will be seen eventually as not doing enough to stop terror. And somebody will go and there will be a big terrorist activity. And then somebody will go into a grocery store and he's a Sikh, which has nothing to do with Islam. And he'll walk into a grocery store or 7-Eleven and Bubba will be there with his gun. And he'll walk up and he said, "You people, you're the problem here." And he'll shoot the Sikh. Well, the FBI will come to town and want to arrest Bubba. And what people will say is, "Turn your cars around. You're part of the problem. You've known about this. You've done nothing. Yes, what Bubba did is wrong, and we know it. But you're a bigger problem." I believe that is happening now. In a lesser degree, it is already happening. People are supporting things they know aren't right, they would never support, but they see a bigger wrong. You are supporting Paul Manafort, people are. Why? You know that guy's a dirtbag. Well, because they're focused on a bigger wrong. Wait a minute. We know what Paul did was wrong, but why aren't you guys looking at that? If you want to get Paul, then you got to get these guys too. That's the Bubba effect. The Bubba effect happens when you lose confidence. We all know that there is a line we're not even close to, and that line is common sense. Most Americans know, the vast majority of Americans know, I'm not with the Antifa people, and I'm not with the Nazi people. I'm not with the, you know, God hates fags people, and I'm not with the Hollywood crowd. I'm not with either of those. I don't have a problem. The vast majority of Americans don't have a problem with one another. We can live. We're still kind. We're still those people. But it seems like all of the forces are going in the opposite direction. Did you hear about the woman who tried to get a job at a, I think it's a local high school. I'm going to give it to you later. She tried to get a job as a coach. Well, she was a lesbian who had given up her lesbian lifestyle. She was immediately rejected for the position. Well, what? Why? Politically incorrect.
She was rejected because she rejected
her lesbian lifestyle.
Keep track of the stuff.
I know.
Anymore.
It's crazy. It's crazy. No, most people don't have a problem. What you do in your bedroom, you do in your bedroom. What people are having a problem with is jamming things down everyone's throat and forcing everyone to live a certain way. That's what they say they have a problem with Christians. And you know what? Some Christians I have a problem with too, because you have to live their way. Well, no, that's not the way Jesus was talking about it. Christians live a different lifestyle, and they're peacemakers, and they're kind, and they help the poor, and they stand on what they believe is true, and they're willing to die for what they believe is true. But Jesus wasn't like, you will get baptized, or I'm going to get the government involved. No, he wouldn't have done that. And most Christians know that, and most Christians would never force people. We've been controlled by the edges and the extremes. And I, for one, am tired of, I'm tired of it, because we're not getting anything done. We're not actually protecting our children. Because of political correctness, because of political agendas, kids were killed on Monday. If it wasn't for Bill de Blasio's political agenda, he would have listened to this imam. They would have listened, most likely.
But I mean, even if they listened, whether they could have stopped this particular attack is questionable.
Are they going in? Yeah, I agree with that.
Yeah.
But are they going into these? Are they going into these mosques? Are they going into these hotbeds?
I think the answer to that is probably no. Right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's. I think sometimes it happens. There are certain when they really have a reason.
Yes.
But it's more rare than it should be because people are afraid of the backlash.
Right. And, you know, I God bless the FBI. The FBI has probably saved us from many of these that we don't know about. So God bless the actual agents. But from any agent that I've ever talked to, they're also frustrated because the upper end, the Washington crew, they know what's right. And they're not doing it because of political correctness. There's a story in theblaze.com. Most people cannot remember a worse time in America. That's incredible. Meanwhile, depression rates and suicide rates are going through the roof. We'll talk about those here in just a few minutes. Number of Americans preparing for emergencies have soared. Why? Because, look, you know what? I've got some stories today. I think you're seeing top down, bottom up, inside out being perpetrated on the right now. Antifa is claiming that they are going to take a national action beginning November 4th until Trump is removed from office. But Steve Bannon is also doing something that is really disturbing. And I want to talk to you about it. I think it is top down, bottom up, inside out on both sides.
We should point out, too, that we have a really in-depth look at Antifa coming up, not next week, but the week after. on a week-long chalkboard series, looking back at the history, how they got here, what they're actually trying to do, how they're structured, going through all of it. If you've heard the, you know, the term Antifa a million times and you just see them protesting at colleges and don't know all of this, it's, you know, there's a lot to know. And it goes back, you know, a century. It really is pretty interesting. So that's coming up in a couple of weeks.
People have asked
on TV,
you know, for chalkboards and asked, you know, Glenn, you got to go back and start showing us the connections. Okay. I will tell you that I have had a big change in my life in the last 8 months, and it has been what matters most. And when you really start to focus on what matters most, then you start to look at what do I do? What if I narrow it down, what do I do? And you start to look at and say, well, what do I do best? And I think laying things out on a chalkboard is one of the things I do best. And we've changed the show in the last 2 weeks, and it's getting rave reviews. So if you haven't watched the show in a long time or haven't been a subscriber to The Blaze, just watch this week, because you'll see the chalkboards. We are teaching socialism today. We tell you the truth about socialism and free universal college education. I cannot believe the truth behind the free education in Sweden that no one has ever talked about. No one ever says this. Oh, you won't believe it tonight. Anyway, so people are preparing. My Patriot Supply will help you prepare for emergencies. They've helped me for almost 10 years now. You can start now with their 102 serving food kit for only $99. That's less than a dollar per serving. Call 800-200-7163. You can order the kit or go online at preparewithglenn.com. Going to be shipped free to your home. Includes breakfast, lunch, dinner, and it will last up to 25 years. And when a crisis strikes, you are going to be there. You'll be the one in the neighborhood that is prepared and not freaking out. Whether it is a fire, a flood, a hurricane, an earthquake, your family is going to be okay. Call 800-200-7163 or order online at preparewithglenn.com. Dependable emergency food storage. My Patriot Supply. Preparewithglenn.com.
Glenn Beck.
If you're a cat person, you should not pay attention for a while. People love their dogs more than people. Now, I don't think that's new. However, according to two new major studies, it's getting it's reaching, I think, frightening levels. There was a study done in England. And you were showed two advertisements. One was, would you give £5 to save Harrison from a slow, painful death? The two ads, one was a puppy or a dog, and the other was a person. The puppy, yes. Yes. The dog, yes. The person? No, not really. Now, that was the first. The next one, students were shown fake newspaper clippings about a baseball attack on a puppy, on an adult dog, on a year-old infant, and a 30-year-old adult. They were asked questions to gauge their empathy, and the adult finished last. Only the infant received a slightly higher level of empathy than the puppy, and then the adult dog, then the person.
That's not rational. You're describing is not rational.
No, no. I mean, we should have. I mean, I could be fine with the scores were tied. Scores were tied.
Yeah,
I could live with that.
I mean, I can understand it. It doesn't make sense. Though it was, they've dove into this pretty deeply in the documentary, The Boss Baby, in which
that was
really the issue was with that is yeah. That babies no longer got the love and attention, and the puppies were passing them in the cuteness scale.
Right.
And that was what this organization was actually put together to fight against.
Okay, that was not a documentary.
At the end, I mean, I don't want to give anything away here, but it's a true story.
Yeah.
They did wind up turning that around a little bit, which
right.
was, I think, a positive thing for humanity, because if right. people like dogs more than babies, who knows what could happen? You could maybe abort 50 million of them. That would be a terrible consequence of something like that.
Can you imagine, though?
Yeah,
can you imagine an organization, trying to start an organization that would abort puppies? People would never let it happen.
Nope.
Glenn Beck. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
People are worried about money. People are worried about work. But now, the current national and world events are more escapable than ever. People are worrying about the future of the United States more than anything else. The American Psychological Association released its annual Stress in America survey, which revealed that most Americans cannot remember a time where it has been worse. Survey findings: 63% of respondents report significant stress about the future of America. 63. 62% say money is a big source of stress. 61% cite work. 59% say the present time is the lowest point in the nation's history that they can remember. This includes some people that lived through World War II. Think of that. Vietnam, the Cuban Missile Crisis, and September 11th. The leading source of respondent stress: healthcare, 43, the economy, 35. After that, trust in the government, 32, hate crime, other crimes, 31, wars and terrorist attacks coming in at 30%. Look at that. Did you see the latest on healthcare? That healthcare, the average silver plan when Obamacare first came out, the average silver plan was about $10,000 a year. The average silver plan today is $21,000 a year. That is insanity. It's insanity. Why are we not rising up and say, get the government out of this? They've doubled the cost. News consumption now is at an all-time high. And social media gives more exposure to ever than to the problems that America's face. According to the survey, 20% of the people check social media constantly. 56% of the respondents say that staying informed causes them stress. You should try to be on this side of the microphone. You should see the stuff we leave out. 72% of the respondents say they think the media blows things out of proportion, adding to stress. 87%, most Americans, 87% agree that everybody needs to take a deep breath and just calm down.
It's hard to, you know, I think we get lost in the nonsense of the day to day. You know, I mean, you talked about a stat like this just the other day, but since 1990, 17,258 children die. It used to be 17,258 children would die every day that are currently not dying. The improvement we've made since 1990 globally. So it's a 53% drop in the amount of kids that don't make it to 5 years old.
Wow.
It's since 1990. How is that possible? I mean, it's been said that it's the greatest human achievement ever. And I think, I don't see how you don't look at it that way. I mean, all these kids that used to die now live. And it comes out to, it's over 6 million a year, 17,000 plus per day, that used to die in 1990 and now live because of improvements largely through capitalism.
Causing problems with overpopulation and global warming.
Exactly. And that's the way people look at
yes.
it. They look at
yes.
it all negative. And it's like, while we do have so many things that are so irritating and so many problems that we can focus on every day, those huge things, that's way bigger than anything we've even talked about. I mean, think about this. We'll talk for days and days and days about a terrorist attack that kills people, and it's horrible, and we have to stop it, and it's a big deal. I'm not saying it's not. But, I mean, you know, we'll talk about that for days, and we'll never even mention something like that.
Yeah.
Millions of children every year are surviving that used to just die for no reason other than we couldn't feed them.
Well, if you remember right, we gave you the stats that in 1830, was it 87% of the population or 93%?
Oh, it was 98%, I think, in 1820, wasn't it?
Yeah,
Lived in extreme poverty, right?
Yeah.
Is that the one
you're talking about? Yeah, extreme poverty. Mm-hmm. It was around 90. It was really close to 100%. But it was around 90%, okay? Extreme poverty. That number is now down globally to 9.7. That, hello?
It's a miracle.
It is a miracle.
Absolute miracle. And it's something that we never think about because it happens slowly. I remember John Stossel did a report on this a long time ago about when they fire an entire factory in a town and, you know, they'll close down a factory and it's obviously a big deal. And what happens is all the news, local news organizations go to that factory and everyone's walking out with boxes of their stuff and they're carrying out all their belongings. They're crying. They've lost their livelihood. Terrible, terrible tragedy. And it's an easy way to illustrate how bad free trade is, mm-hmm. right? It's a lot harder to do a report on the people who left that job and got better jobs a month later and are much happier 2 years from that point. Now, he went and actually decided to do that and found people from those factories who that had happened to. And when you look at the overall economic statistics, you can find that data very easily, but it's very difficult to illustrate for a local news station.
It's really easy to extrapolate that to things like the horse and buggy industry. Mm-hmm. Look how many people were displaced and how bad that was for a while.
Yeah, it killed an entire industry. Everyone who had the horse and buggy businesses all went down in the tubes and... Unless you look back at it a few years later.
And you go, wow, look at what happened once we stop riding horses and start using cars.
It was a lot better.
Right, well, except for global warming.
I don't know. The horse thing would be right.
Yeah, probably.
It had its own environmental problems.
Yeah, it did.
Piles of manure everywhere. It wasn't exactly positive either.
So here's why I mentioned this. We are, we're entering a time. And I want you to know, we make it through this. We go to the other side. And I don't mean like, you know, to the other side like, you know, we die. I mean, we make it through this. We do. Whatever is coming, we make it through. But we have to hold on to each other. And we have to be able to hold on to hope. And this is the thing that anarchists and anyone who wants to cause any kind of trouble, this is what they try to destroy your hope and then give you hope in something false. Hope in them, usually. Mm-hmm. Hope in a person. Hope in something like, you know, communism that never works. You have to have hope in something that is real. Depression rates now for teenagers going through the roof. In general, the suicide rate has gone from 6.6 to 7.3. But in ages 12 to 17, it has gone up 8.7 in 2005 to 12.9 in 2015. The youth is lost. What can they believe in? What can they trust? What's universally true? What hope do they have? Really, seriously, what hope do they have? Fame? They don't want to be like us. They don't want to be like their parents. They see their parents racked with debt, working so hard, frustrated with everything that's going on in the world. They see this system, this global system, as being completely bogus, only adding to misery. They don't want any part of that. And no one is talking to them about a brighter future. And what they're, what's happening to them is they're able to connect with each other better than ever before. They're able to communicate. But what's being communicated on those devices? What is it doing? It is sucking them in to a world that is getting smaller and smaller and smaller instead of bigger and bigger and bigger. And it's not causing them happiness because of the Facebook effect. Everybody has a perfect life. Everybody is happy except them. No, no, Facebook is another lie. You're being sucked into another lie. What is true anymore? We better find that, and we better find it quickly. Nothing is more essential than protecting your home, but traditional home security is a punishing and expensive task. There is a better way. You can protect your home with SimpliSafe. Anybody who's been locked into a long-term contract, you know that you're in this thing for, you know, at least 3 years, 5 years. The installation cost through the roof, and then they've hardwired the system, and you don't really even own it. And by the time, you know, you move or something, you don't own it, so you can't move with it. You've paid for it about four times over. And what? You just leave it there? SimpliSafe is a totally wireless security system that you own, and it is unbelievably inexpensive. I mean, I really, truly was shocked when I looked at the price. SimpliSafe has no long-term contracts. Your home is protected around the clock, 24/7. There's no hidden fees, and the cost of the monitoring is $15 a month. That's three times less than the other guys. So go to SimpliSafeBeck.com. This is the new way of doing it. 10% discount your order today. If you need your system for some reason tonight, you can go to Best Buy and you can have it up and running within an hour. But I would save the 10% and I would go to SimpliSafeBeck.com. SimpliSafeBeck.com.
Glenn Beck. Glenn Beck.
I'm actually starting to get excited for the singularity. I'm doing a lot of research on future of tech, and I started to reread the Ray Kurzweil book, Singularity is Near.
Which is when man and machine become one, basically,
yes.
Right?
Yes.
Like where there's
yes.
No, you can't no tell longer the tell the difference between them.
Yeah, and you start to merge. And so...
But he really does look at it positively, right?
Oh, yeah, he does.
He thinks there's this really exciting possibilities for the future.
Yeah. He's a fascinating guy. We have to get him back on. My first interview with him, I waited, I think, 12 years. Remember?
It was a huge deal. CNN Headline News, we did it, right?
Yeah, tried to get him for 12 years. He would never come on. Finally got him after 12 years of asking. And he is fascinating to listen to. You know, his parents escaped from Nazi Germany, and his grandparents did as well. When he was raised here in America, his parents said, you know what? It is what happened in Germany is people started to divide themselves and nobody got to know the Jews. Nobody got to know each other. And they all started to divide themselves. See if that sounds familiar. And so his parents took him to a Unitarian Universalist church, which is, you know, basically it. That's the church where I swear to you, Tanya and I went when we went on our church tour.
And your church tour was you were looking for a church to join before you got married.
Yeah, looking for a church that, yeah, the two of us could agree on. And so went on this church tour and we went to the Universalist Unitarian church. And that's the one that the preacher said halfway through the service in his sermon. Now, you all know that I don't believe in God, but and we were like, Why the preacher doesn't believe in God? Why? You should put that on the front door. Come on in. Our preacher doesn't believe in God. I mean, that's something you lead with, I think.
Now, you know, I think this vacuum's a piece of crap, but we really need you to buy it.
I mean, it was incredible. It was just incredible. So he started going to a Universalist church when he was a kid. And what his parents said was, we're going to go here and then we're going to learn everything about it. And then in a couple of months, we're going to go to another church and we're going to learn everything about it. And then we're going to go to another church and we're going to learn everything about it. And so he became this kid that was fascinated with what we have in common, because what he found is most of the churches and most of the religion had a vast majority of things in common. And while the differences really set them apart, what connected them was more important. And so he's always had this, you know, weird kind of thinking or different kind of thinking. You know, he's 6 years old in 1950s and he's trying to build a rocket ship long before anybody else is actually building one. He wants to go to the moon. And then by 1965, he starts to realize, you know, maybe I should start doing something that will actually happen, you know, in my backyard. And he started as this inventor and realized everyone was wrong about predicting the future because they weren't taking in exponential growth. And so he started out as in the 70s, he was saying no one can predict the future. Everyone's always wrong with flying cars and everything else. Always wrong. You cannot predict the future. And then he started studying exponential growth of computers. And he realized, wait a minute, I think you can. And he had it perfected by 1990. And that's when he wrote The Age of...
Spiritual Machines.
No, Human Machines or something like that. And then The Age of Spiritual Machines came out. And now he's talking about the singularity, and he says the singularity will happen by 2029, and we will be able to upgrade our thinking by 2025. 2025.
Upgrade our thinking.
He says that human, and you know, Stephen Hawking just came out with something yesterday where he said the human race is over. And I haven't had time to read the whole thing. I just grabbed that story. I haven't had time to read the whole thing. But I think he's saying kind of the same thing that that Ray Kurzweil is saying, that the human race as we know it is over, but we merge with machines and we become something far greater. It's bizarre.
Glenn Beck. Love, courage, truth. Glenn Beck.
First responders are often completely wrong. And I'm not talking about police or paramedics. I'm talking about the first responder. I believe first responders are us. And when you are the first responder on Twitter or Facebook, the ones that rush to announce that an incident is not Islamic-related terrorism, they're almost always wrong. After Tuesday's terrorist attack in New York City, for example, a Twitter account called New York City Alerts tweeted, breaking update, NYPD official confirms incident in downtown Manhattan was not terror related. Completely false. Later, they tweeted, per the PD sources, a fight between two truck drivers led to one truck hitting multiple pedestrians and one truck driver opened fire. Your attempt to recover from not Islamic extremists, you just made it worse. We've seen other examples like this in recent years, calling the 2015 San Bernardino terrorist attack workplace violence. Social media users misidentifying the Charlottesville killer, which forced a Michigan man and his family to flee their home because of death threats. Sometimes it's people on the far left. Sometimes people on the far right. Somebody out there always has a reason to spread false information that helps their agenda. But sometimes it's just people trying to be the first to report something and get a bunch of retweets. Either way, not helpful. Either way, don't believe it. In 1844, a New York Herald reporter wrote about a remarkable new telegraph technology, said, "There is nothing now left for invention to achieve but to discover news before it takes place." Wait, what? Guess what? They've invented that. They're describing our current fake news in social media. It's finding news before it happens. Ironically, our instant communication doesn't help us get to the truth faster. It does just the opposite. This week, Congress is fretting about the ads that Russia polluted our Facebook feeds with last year. Some of the ads may have looked convincing, but the ad can't hypnotize you and cause you to press the like or share buttons. You actually have to do that. And we have to be more discerning than that. The fake news problem isn't about shutting down whoever is creating the fake content. The fake news problem is about Americans losing this ability to recognize propaganda and then even care about it. Sure, it may be difficult to discern at times. It might require extra effort. I say this often because I believe it's important advice. You got to do your own homework. If we can't get a handle on how to responsibly navigate something like social media, wait until AI gets further down the tracks. Then we're really in trouble, because AI will know exactly how to play you for clicks, for likes, for cash. When we get to that point, we might want to go back to the invention of the future. The telegram might be a great option.
It's Thursday, November 2nd. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
All right, so the House has just released their tax plan. And let's get to it, because there's a lot of stuff in there that is not what the speculation was saying, that had me gravely concerned.
Well, yeah, it depends on how you look at it, I suppose.
Well, let me ask you this. The worst thing that we could do is put a phase out on corporate taxes.
Right, and that does not seem to have. It is a permanent 20% corporate income tax rate.
That would be good. That will help create jobs.
Yeah, you'd think so, right? From where it is now, the highest 20, in the world, basically. Yeah.
Highest in the world to 20% permanent, something that corporations can count on, I think that's really good. If you could get it down to 15%, then you're really competitive. And mm-hmm. people are starting to look at the United States and going, you know what? We should park our businesses over in the United States. It's a 15% tax.
Yeah. Well, with the relative, the U.S. gets a bump to global business because of the relative stability. I know it doesn't feel stable here sometimes, but when you think
it's
about
worse overseas,
yeah, you think about putting it in another country somewhere. Where do you go? Right. What's your choice? There might be one or two, but generally speaking, we're still seen as the gold standard when it comes to stability.
Anybody think that Germany is more stable than we are?
Right. No. So if you can just be competitive, we have a lot of advantages.
Yes.
And so far with the corporate tax rate, we have not been competitive. So a lot of companies want to stay away. And, you know, there's other things to fight there because of higher wages. And there's a lot. Yeah. There's a lot of built-in costs
to
doing business.
Safety standards, everything.
Yeah. But a lot of it's good, too. There's a lot of benefits to some of that stuff. So that's a big one. And now this would make us have a competitive rate globally, so that other countries or businesses that are creating new giant factories would consider potentially putting them here.
The problem with factory work
is a bad example.
Factory work is over. And one of the reasons...
Especially here.
Yeah, one of the reasons why is robotics. But the other, and why Stu said, especially here, is... There's no loyalty to factory work now in America. Everyone will look at a factory job as a stepping stone. I'm going to take this factory job until I can get a real job. And so the companies look at, for instance, Mexico, and they see people who are thrilled to have that factory job. And they'll take that factory job and they'll work there their whole life.
Oh, and in Mexico, that's first world compared to a lot of it.
That's great.
They talked about this when they were talking about big tariffs on products coming from China. And the idea was, well, if you put tariffs from China, they're going to come back here. They're not going to come back here. They're going to go to Bangladesh, where they can save 75% off of China. China is high priced compared to Bangladesh, so they can go there and save 75% off labor by going from China, or they can save 50% by going to India. So that is, it becomes impossible. There'll always be somebody who can undercut the United States by a gigantic margin for those types of jobs.
Right.
However,
we need to be stable and intelligent. That's what we need to do. And we're heading in the wrong direction on both of those.
No 401k changes. That was one of the things discussed. So that not being in there is a positive. The idea was that they were going to lower the amount you could put in your 401k, which is a strange incentive, right? I mean, why would you want people to save less for their retirement?
Because you want velocity of money.
Yeah, I mean, there are reasons why people like it. But it's not in this bill. Mm-hmm. So that's a positive. A new family credit that expands the child tax credit to $1,600. It was $1,000. So that would be a little bit more money if you have children. State and local property tax deductions are capped at $10,000, and they're also hitting mortgage deductions. So if you're a homeowner, this is a big deal. So if you have, if you're in a high tax state, if you're in New Jersey, for example, your tax rate, you own a 300 square foot home and your taxes are $30,000 a year, you can only deduct up to $10,000 of that, which is a big deal. I mean, that's going to hit you.
This is a real problem. This is going to be a problem for a lot of industries in the end, because millennials already don't want to buy their own home. They don't like starter homes. So construction of starter homes is going to disappear. They don't like starter homes. They would rather rent something and then buy the home that they want when they're going to build their family.
When they really want it.
Yeah. So when they really want it. So home ownership is already going down, and you know, to add, oh, and by the way, you don't have a tax incentive to buy a home. That's going to hurt.
It is going to hurt. Now, I think from an economic perspective, that's actually a good change. I don't think that the government should be involved in telling you whether you should own or rent, and is what they do right now.
Yes.
As a homeowner who doesn't really want to be a homeowner, I think that's a bad set of incentives, what we've set up over this time. And it's what leads to things like housing collapses.
When you have a system where you can actually rent something and it's not year to year, when you have options, that wouldn't be so bad.
I do think that's part of the reason, right?
Yes.
People buy houses so there aren't as many options.
Yes.
And this is going to make I'm going to build on that a little bit more here with this next one. This is a big one and was not expected and reported in advance. The new tax bill caps your mortgage interest deduction at $500,000. So basically you can deduct your interest on your home. I think it's up to currently $1 million, which, you know, it gets everybody except for really super high priced homes, obviously. Mm-hmm. Depending on where you live, $500,000 isn't necessarily a gigantic home. If you live in a expensive area,
you live in L.A., New York,
Connecticut, anywhere in the Northeast. I mean, there's a lot anywhere, big suburbs.
Yeah, $500,000. Anywhere in the Northeast.
Now, if you have a house right now and it's a $600,000 house and you're freaking out about this, remember, first of all, your first $500,000 you'd be able to deduct. Second of all, this only applies to new homes. Now, I'm a little bit unsure at this point whether it means new homes or newly purchased homes. So if you were to buy a newly built home, it would definitely apply. If you were to buy a home that someone else already lived in, I'm not 100% sure. It's not clear by the initial release of the information, but it does say $500,000. So that's, you know, a mortgage deduction of $500,000 is a big deal if you're a homeowner. If you already have something above that, you're grandfathered in. So that's a big part of this. It is already hitting home builders' stocks very hard.
not an initial
as soon as it was released, it was a big drop for a lot of these home builders, which is not a huge surprise.
It's not good. I shouldn't say that. Look, everything is going to change, but I would like some stability in the chaos. You know what I mean? The government has to stop furthering the chaos. Home ownership and all of this stuff is changing because of the demographics. So that's going to cause chaos in the home construction business. Already, the government has to stop changing rules and laws and taxes and everything else. That's why corporate tax rate, to see it locked in and not just for 10 years, is really important. Because you need to signal to the market that this country is stable, knowing that instability is coming just because of market forces.
Yeah, and that's kind of a big deal. Because it's not always what's wrong with the tax plan. It's the instability of not knowing what's coming in the future.
Yes, yes.
In addition to that, we have the breakdown of the rates. So it will go to the new tax rate would be 20% up to $90,000. Then
combined or single?
That is, I just clicked off of it. You're gonna have to give me a second. I think it's couples.
So a $90,000
over $90,000, you hit the 20% bracket. Then at $260,000, you hit the 35% bracket. That's kind of a new situation because that used to be you're getting into the top rate then. So they basically moved these. They kept these rates similar. 39.6 rate. We get the giant tax cut to the 39.6 rate from 39.6 to 39.6. The difference being that they're raising the level to get in there. So before it was 400 and something thousand. Now it's a million. You have to earn over a million to get to that 39.6 rate. The death tax is something we've talked about for a long time. If they've gone back and forth, supposedly Susan Collins has said in the Senate she won't vote for it unless they keep the death tax. And again, they need basically every single Republican to vote for this. So they can lose two only. So Collins is important if you want to pass this thing in the Senate. She said that the House plan, however, does not kill the death tax. It doubles the exemption. So you you can pass more of your money to your kids if you happen to have a lot of money. And then it eventually kills it in 2024. So it does eventually go away, but it takes a while under this plan. I would expect that to die in the Senate because they're going to need Collins' vote. And, you know, they're probably going to put that in there if she really wants it. And again, we don't talk about this that often. I think it's completely immoral, the death tax. However, it hits almost nobody. It's the actual amount is over $5 million. So what the Democrats say is, well, millionaires, who cares? Who cares if the millionaires can pass their money on to their kids? Well, you know what? It's really not up to you to care or not care. It's their money.
And here's why this is so ridiculous. Anybody who has that kind of money, they put it all in a trust.
That you're going to find a way around that.
You
anyway.
Find a way around it. It's just a stupid law that is meaningless to anybody who actually has $10 million. They're going to find a way to, you know, gift that to their kids over time, you know, or put it into a trust. It's just stupid.
It is stupid, but it's completely immoral. In my mind, it's double taxing it.
It's
money. These people have paid money on these taxes already. They were already taxed when they got the money, and then they're getting taxed again after they're dead.
Yeah.
I mean, it's incomprehensible to me, but it is still something that it's hard to get the general public upset about it because 99.9% of people are never going to have to deal with it.
Yep.
It's just still wrong.
Yep.
The child tax credit, I think I mentioned, $1,000 to $1,600. The local property thing we talked about, and here it is again, 25%. At $90,000, $45,000 for individuals. 35% bracket kicks in at $260,000 for couples, $200,000 for individuals, and 39.6 kicks in for $1 million for couples, $500,000 for individuals.
What's below the 20? Nothing.
I don't have that detail at the moment. I can get it here.
So you're making less than $45,000. You don't pay any taxes?
Again, I would not assume that from what I know. There are four brackets they're going to, and they're keeping supposedly the 39.6. But there was always the talk about that fourth bracket being above that. Whether that happens in the Senate, we don't know.
Fourth bracket above.
Yeah, because this was a big Steve Bannon proposal. If you're a fan of Bannon, you might not realize that he had proposed raising taxes. And at like $5 million and I'm raising it to 45% or something. And it, basically it was a way to
say
wait, look, we're going after the rich.
I'm raising a tax on myself.
Right, exactly.
If you think Donald Trump doesn't have the attorneys to figure out how to make sure that he doesn't fall into that bracket and pay him some other way, you're crazy. It's just a shell game. It's stupid. It's stupid.
So you look at this and you say, well, is this what I want out of all Republican control of all three branches of government? The answer to that is absolutely not. It's a completely tentative plan. It's a weak effort. That being said, would it be a slight improvement for most people? Yeah. So, I mean, I don't think it's a horrible idea. You wish you could have done a lot better than
this. The only thing that is a game changer, and I would have liked to see it go down more, the only thing that is a game changer is the corporate income
yes.
tax.
Mm-hmm.
The corporate income tax,
it's a big one,
going to 20% makes us viable as a candidate globally. And that can really spur the economy. The rest of it, you know, it will impact some people. But the corporate tax could actually spur the economy. Hey, are you tired of looking out through your windows, through crooked, busted blinds? They're pretty ugly. You can email blinds.com and somebody will reply right back if you need somebody to help you. Otherwise, you can go to blinds.com yourself and you just get online. And find the blinds that you want. You won't believe the selection that blinds.com has now. They are the biggest online seller of blinds, shades, shutters, drapes, because they've been doing it honestly since the 90s. And they really have customer service down. They have everything that you need in an easy way. If you want a designer to help you, it's free. You just email them and say, hey, I don't know what the hell I'm doing. And they'll help you. They'll, you know, you can take pictures of the windows and the rooms that are in, and they will help you pick out the right blind, shade, shutters, drapes. And if you accidentally mismeasure or pick the wrong color, they're going to remake your blinds for free. They'll even send you the free samples to make sure that everything is exactly like you saw it online. You're like, yeah, it's not quite the same. Every order gets free shipping. It is blinds.com. Use the promo code BECK right now through November 7th. You're going to save 35% off everything, plus an additional 5 when you use the promo code BECK at blinds.com. That's blinds.com.
Glenn Beck. Glenn Beck.
Oh my gosh. This is stunning. Nearly half of all American millennials, 44%, would rather live in a socialist country over a capitalist country. 44%. 71% of millennials surveyed could properly identify what communism is and often conflated the two economic systems. Now, it's ignorance that is the biggest problem. 16% of millennials could accurately define what socialism is. I want to talk to you about this because there are two other findings in this survey that are truly terrifying. Next.
Glenn Beck. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
We're doing a special all this week on socialism, and it wraps up today with almost the whole show just being on socialism, and we take on the biggest lie of socialism, and that is free education. Sweden has free education. No. Actually, when you do your homework, it's amazing what you find. It's beyond not free education. It is. Was it stunning? Did you know this, too? What we found out about education in Sweden?
No.
No idea. And there's a reason why no one talks about it. But we should. It is a total and complete lie. And we'll show that to you tonight on the Blaze TV. And And all four of these segments, we've done a whole week, are available at theblaze.com. And share them and share them with your family. And here's why. Nearly half of American millennials, 44%, would rather live in a socialist country than a capitalist one. Here it is. The millennials, capitalist, 42%. I'd like to live in a capitalist country, 42%. Socialist, 44%. Mm. Here's where it gets scary. Millennials, 7% of millennials say, I'd rather live in a communist country. And 7% of the millennials say they'd rather live in a fascist country.
Jeez. It
gets worse. 23%, so almost a quarter. 23% of those 21 to 29 years old say Joseph Stalin was a hero. 25% say that one of the biggest killers, murderers of the 20th century, bigger than Hitler, was a hero. Beyond that, an equal number of 20-somethings describe North Korea's Kim Jong-un also as a hero. Millennials give conflicting answers about free speech. 71% say it ought to be protected. An alarming 48% say it should be limited on social media. 45% say it should be limited on college campuses so it doesn't offend anyone. Oh, my gosh. Geez. Okay, now, here's some good news. Here's some good news. We lost a generation. We lost the millennials because we weren't paying attention. Listen to this. Matures. So anybody who was alive during World War II, matures, 78% want to live in a capitalist country, 78%, followed by baby boomers, 66%, Gen Xers, 57%, millennials, 42%. Notice the trend, 78, 66, 57, 42% of millennials say they want to live in a capitalist country. The generation following them, where do you think this one is? Generation Z, 78, 66, 57, 42,
0.
67% want to live in a capitalist country.
So more than not only millennials, but also Generation X.
More than baby boomers.
Wow. That's really positive.
That's really positive. To me, what that says is... this is the Tea Party generation. This is the generation that has woken up because what they're seeing now, what they're growing up with, how we're raising them. They are seeing and they are learning, hopefully, they are learning what these things are because we started to teach them. But we have to teach them completely. We have to teach them the worst about our country. They have to hear it from us. They have to hear the worst of our country and the worst things about capitalism. Because you know they're going to hear it when they get outside. And so you need to teach them the worst things about our country and then the worst things about socialism and the worst things about communism. And if there's any positive on socialism or communism, you should talk about it. And you need to talk about all the good things that this country has done. But the problem is, we just tell, it's like our faith. We expect our kids that we're going to raise them and we're going to tell them all of these great things about Jesus and religion. And then they're going to go to college and they're going to hold fast. Well, they might. If we've done our job, they might. But I know a lot of parents who have done their job and their kids go to school and they say, nope, because they're hearing for the very first time concepts that they had not heard before. You need to teach your children the other side in a safe environment so they hear the other side and they understand. Okay. All right. So that's what people are going to say. Yeah. And why is that wrong? And really teach them. It's the only way. We're trying to do that now with my TV show at 5 o'clock. I've tried to return back to the only thing that I think I'm good at, and that's teaching at a blackboard. And so we are teaching socialism all this week. Today, you don't want to miss it at 5 o'clock. If you're not a member, please become a member. We will make these available for free in hopefully 30 to 60 days. I have to check contracts and see when we can, but I'm going to make them available as soon as I can. So they'll be on YouTube so you can share them. But instead of like Prager University, they go and they raise money to be able to make those. And those videos are about $50,000 a piece, and they're very good, but they're that 3 minutes is $50,000. We use this money that you are subscribing, and we are going to start making those kinds of classes. In a couple of weeks, we're going to do something on Antifa. You will learn everything you need to know about Antifa. We are going to do things on each amendment of the Bill of Rights so you can truly understand the Bill of Rights and what your rights are and why they came to be, why they're important, why you can't say, oh, well, free speech, but it needs to be limited over here. No. And why? And we're teaching those every day at 5 o'clock, only on theblaze.com/TV.
Yeah, that's going to be really, I think, interesting. And I think we'd definitely like to get your feedback on other ideas you have for these week-long series. We've already had a lot of really good suggestions from the audience. But if you go to the, Twitter is a good place to go, at World of Stew, at Glenn Beck, or on the Facebook pages and put it in the comments. Because there's always Antifa was suggested by a listener of this show and just said, hey, you know, I'd love to know what's not only just what you see in like an occasional video where they're punching a white supremacist. What's the philosophy that leads to that? What's the history that's built to that moment? How are they manipulating that history and manipulating young people to get involved in it? That's all included in this week.
Yeah.
And it's a kind of a really interesting look. So if you have one of those weird topics that you hear a lot and you're a little bit confused about, or you think a lot of people around you are confused about the real history of it, that's the sort of topic we're looking for.
And so, you know, we're also making this so you can share it with, you know, the family members that, you know, don't think like we do. I do not come at this, for instance, with even with Antifa, I'm coming at this with the angle of, look, I want to be anti-fascist. It's good to be anti-fascist, sure. Right? Mm-hmm. So why is Antifa, why would anybody be against Antifa? And we break it down and we show you the history and we show you the connections. On socialism, I'm very frank. Capitalism seems mean. It really does. It seems to play into greed and seems mean when it's compared to something that says, hey, why don't we just share?
Yeah.
Why don't we just take care of people that are starving, that are hungry, that don't have health care? You have enough. It seems like the right thing to do in your heart. So why does it fall apart?
Yeah.
And we didn't show you just the Stalins and the Maos. We showed you the utopian socialist, including our pilgrims. And we showed you why it didn't work. And you can have the best of intentions, but it still doesn't work because it goes against basic human nature. And we explain that. And then tonight we've saved the best, I think, the best for last, because it's the argument that everybody who's a millennial is saying, well, it's free, free education. We need free education. And Sweden does it. Why can't we? Oh, because Sweden doesn't actually do that. And we'll prove it to you, show you what it actually is in Sweden. Socialism, the big lie, tonight, 5 o'clock, only on The Blaze TV. By the way, we have to get to Bitcoin. Yesterday, we told you, put $100 in it. Just put $100 in it. You would have made 10 bucks if you put $100 in it yesterday.
Just yesterday.
It's almost, what is it, 71 or 73? It was up to 7,300.
Yeah, about 71 right now.
71. It yesterday was at 60...
64, 63, yeah. Something like that when we were talking about it.
Yeah, we were talking, I think it was 63 when we were talking about it yesterday. It's over 7,000 today.
Yeah, the good thing about it, too, is that it's never going to end, and it's always going to go up straight
always,
up in a giant,
always.
Just an incredible front
of
side
that,
of the mountain.
None of that is true.
No.
None of that is true.
It could end at any moment, but it is an interesting ride.
And we want to talk about that. I also want you to understand there is a huge difference between Bitcoin and gold. And let me explain. This is sponsored by Goldline. Let me explain that what Stu just said is so critical. This could go up. And this is why I say put $100 in it. I don't say put 10. I believe you should put 10% into gold. I have 10% in gold because I believe that is rock solid stability. It is the last line of defense for a world that has gone completely unhinged. I'm telling you at the same time, don't spend more than you would spend on a weekend. Don't spend anything on Bitcoin that you are not really ready just to walk away from, because there's a chance it goes to zero. Gold will never go to zero. Never. It has intrinsic value, and it also has a history of about 10,000 years.
Just significantly longer than Bitcoin.
Which
is more like 6 years.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Now, people will say, well, yeah, but gold isn't going up. Yeah. Yeah, that's weird, isn't it? It's really weird. And there's lots of reasons for it not going up, but all of it revolves around manipulation from the global markets, or of the global markets, mainly from people who have reason, like fake fiat money, to keep that price down. Gold is the hedge against inflation, hyperinflation. It is durable. It is easy to transport. It looks the same everywhere you go. It's easy to weigh and to grade. It is an insurance against financial calamity, and there is a good shot we head for that. Right now, Goldline is offering free gift cards on qualified purchases and 1 year of free storage on IRA purchases. If you don't have 10% of your holdings in precious metals, I'm telling you, I strongly recommend, because it is the backstop of insanity. They also give you a free American flag lapel pin just for calling to learn more. This is your chance to show pride in the in America and be there at the end with something to help rebuild America. Make sure you read their important risk information. Find out if buying gold or silver is right for you at 1-866-GOLDLINE, 1-866-GOLDLINE or goldline.com.
Glenn Beck. Glenn Beck.
Welcome to the program. So, we're not sure. There's a couple of things I want to talk to you about. First of all, Trump picked Powell as Jerome Powell as the next Federal Reserve governor. So it looks like what's her face is beating it. Yellen, mm-hmm. which is good.
Mm-hmm. He likes Yellen, though. He said he loves Yellen, loves Janet Yellen.
Yeah. Well, and Deutsche Bank, has written a paper. One of their financial, analysts, has published a report, that I don't think you would have seen even 2 years ago. And he asks, is this the beginning of the end of fiat money? Now, this is a bank. This is Deutsche Bank saying, hey, this is we may be in the end of fiat money here. What are we going to do about it? For a bank to release that, I think, especially Deutsche Bank, I think that's a significant development. Maybe it's just me. Also, we don't know if this is true or not. This has been reported that Die Welt, which is a German magazine, or a Finnish tech magazine, I think, say that that Amazon is preparing to accept Bitcoin as a form of payment. CoinDesk reported that Amazon has now registered three cryptocurrency-related web domains, which we don't really know anything. I mean, it's very vague, but it's playing into the speculation that Amazon is going to start taking Bitcoin. If they do, that is a major development in the life of Bitcoin. And as we said yesterday, it was 6,500 and today it's 73. This is not something that I look at as an insurance policy. I look at this as one of those crazy bets. And that's why I've said, don't, you know, if you don't have a lot of money, put $100 in it and that's it. And we got a lot of people asking yesterday, how do I put $100 into Bitcoin? We'll tell you next hour. Stand by.
Glenn Beck. Love, courage, truth. Glenn Beck.
It had been decades since Ariel and his high school friends got together to catch up. 30th anniversary of their graduation was approaching, and Ariel came up with a plan. He's a successful steel mill owner in Argentina, and Ariel had some money saved away for a once-in-a-lifetime holiday. And he decided, I'm going to pay for all of my former classmates' travel to New York, and we're going to celebrate in style. Group of nine friends, having a blast doing touristy things, riding bikes in downtown Manhattan, when the unimaginable happened. A terrorist, hell-bent on murdering whoever he could, rammed his truck into the bikers. Five of these friends were killed. In addition to the five friends from Argentina, three others lost their lives on Tuesday. Nicholas Cleaves was a 23-year-old software developer who had just recently started his first job out of school. The world was at his feet. Darren Drake, 32-year-old project manager for Moody's Analytics. His parents knew something was wrong when they couldn't reach him hours after the attack. They frantically drove to Bellevue Hospital, where they were confronted with their worst fears. Anne DeCat, 31-year-old from Belgium. She was just vacationing in New York with her mother and two sisters. Her three-month-old and three-year-old sons are now motherless. Why? Because of one man's selfish and delusional fantasies, these eight people are dead. Their families are suffering an unthinkable pain. And the scary thing is, this attacker's fantasies, shared by thousands and thousands of others. He's not alone. It will happen again. When will we stop arguing with each other and start naming this hatred by its real name? Islamic terrorism. It's the first step to stopping it.
It's Thursday, November 2nd. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Can we just do something fun for a minute? When Osama bin Laden wasn't planning terrorist attacks, he apparently was watching YouTube videos like Charlie Bit My Finger. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
Charlie Bit My Finger. That was one of the many videos that were found in Osama bin Laden's collection when they stormed his compound. I mean, how bizarre. If you're Charlie, you will forever know that your family little video ended up in the hands of Osama bin Laden, and you made him laugh. Davies Carr said when contacted at his home in London by phone, he said, I don't even know how to react. It's kind of it's kind of hard to take in. You can never really tell, he said, quote, who has a lighter side. It's hard to imagine he's planning terrible things one minute and then laughing with his family over my family in the next. Charlie, by the way, is now 11. Try this one on.
This is reading on in that story before you go to the next one. He also had a number of crochet tutorials. Osama bin Laden was crocheting.
The newly declassified CIA documents, declassified in the Kennedy assassination. There is one intelligence memo that provides details from an informant who told the CIA agent, codenamed Keim Lodi 3, that Hitler was alive and survived World War II. The informant, who also happened to be the agent's friends, added that Philip Citron, a former German SS agent, appeared to be in touch with the Führer in the city of Tunja in Colombia's Boyaca department. According to the memo, Citron said that the Germans residing in Tunja followed Hitler with an idolatry of the Nazi pass, addressing him as Der Führer and affording him the Nazi salute and stormtrooper adulation. Memo also shows a picture of Adolf Strittelmayr signaling that Hitler could have changed his last name. Did you see the picture?
No.
Oh, you didn't?
No.
Let's see if I have it here. I don't think I have it. Somebody in the control room, see if you can find the picture of this. It is a picture. It shows Citron, the SS officer, sitting next to the alleged Hitler, who was said to have committed suicide in the Berlin bunker in 1945. Citron also stated Hitler left Colombia for Argentina around January 1955. CIA memos make it clear the agency was skeptical of the reports, but had to take them seriously. Neither Keim Lodi 3 nor his station is in a position to give an intelligent evaluation of the information, and it is being forwarded as of possible interest, reads another page of the memo dated 1955. Argentine writer, author of After Hitler's Steps, reconstructed Hitler's alleged trip across South America, including a month-long stay in Colombia. But the book has been rejected by historians because it lacked evidence. Hitler's fate has been subject to widespread speculation. According to CNN, in 2009, Soviet KGB agents burned Hitler's remains in 1970 and then threw them into a river based on orders by then Soviet chief Yuri Andropov. According to the report, the bodies of Hitler, his companion, and Goebbels were discovered by the Soviet army in May 1945. But such accounts sparked more doubts when the University of Connecticut in 2009 analyzed a piece of skull that Russia claimed belonged to Hitler. The scientists confirmed that it came from a 20 to 40 year old woman and not Adolf Hitler. What do you think of that?
I mean, I tend to believe that he killed himself in the bunker. There's a good amount of supporting evidence to that. But I mean,
Did you see the picture?
Yeah, I'm looking at the picture now. It's on theblaze.com. You can check it out up there. Obviously it looks like him, although it's been photocopied about 600 times, and it's, you know, you can't, it looks also could be a Hitler impersonator, right? I mean, it's not like it's a clear cut picture, but I mean, it does resemble him, certainly. You'd think, though, if Hitler's alive in Colombia in the 50s and 60s, he's probably changing the mustache, right?
Yeah, that would probably be the first thing. That's probably the first thing to go, yeah. That and probably the armband.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, probably those two things.
So I found a story that I think is really interesting. Of somebody going where most people won't go. Let me read this story to you. Friday, October 20th, 2017, while checking my Twitter feed, I came across a tweet posted by the Associated Press. The AP tweet story reads as follows: Breaking appeals court blocks teen held in Texas facility from obtaining an abortion for now. I had some basic knowledge of what the tweet was referring to, and I posted a simple response, and I quote, good. That was the entirety of my initial response to the AP tweet. The reason for my responses will be divulged shortly. Moments after my tweet, I began to receive an onslaught of hatred. The first response to my good tweet was received at 4:24 p.m., a full 60 seconds after my initial tweet. The tweet was simple and understandable. It read as follows: why? My response, once again, was short and to the point, because I would rather have a child live than die. This is where things quickly devolved into chaos. What follows is a series of tweets from multiple individuals, but it's pretty vulgar, blah, blah, blah. It really hammers him. I mean, it just goes on just hammering this guy over and over and over again. Starts to compare feces with, you know, what are you going to have, a funeral? I hope you play taps every time you flush the toilet. Comparing an abortion or child with feces. He says, I apologize for the vulgarity of what you just read. A small sample of the responses I received just to my tweet of good. He decided to change tactics. And we have him on the phone with us now. Vincent. Vincent, are you there? Good. How are you?
Good, Glenn. How are you doing? Good.
You're a former cop and investigator for the state of Texas, and you were taken aback by the vulgarity of the tweets. And what did you decide to do?
Well, I decided, you know, I did a little bit of, tried to do some humorous stuff as I try to do on Twitter. But basically what I wanted to do was to reach group of people, namely people that thought like me, and to try to motivate people to actually take action and not just talk, because we do a lot of talking and we don't do a lot of action. I wanted people to take steps and do something about it.
And so somebody wrote to you and said, anyone facing forcing this teen into unwanted pregnancy should be prepared to support the child themselves, otherwise it's not their business. And you tweeted, we'll adopt the baby, no questions asked, and pay for medical bills.
Good response.
Right. What happened then?
So I got further challenged on that. You know, you're not really going to do it. So I reached out to the ACLU, to the ACLU of Texas via Twitter, via Facebook Messenger, and via email, offering for my wife and I and our family to adopt a child. And I, you know, posted proof of such, there in one of the Twitter responses.
And you were legitimately serious about this. You, without any other information, you're willing to adopt this child if they'll just allow it to be born.
Correct. My wife and I are actually we're having our final interview of our home study this afternoon. Mm. We're going through the adoption process right now.
So it would have just been a shortcut for you, really.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. Congratulations on that, by the way. My son is adopted, and there's just no greater joy than the day you take your son or daughter home. So congratulations on that. What has been the response? Did you hear back from anyone?
I did hear back pretty quickly on Facebook Messenger from the ACLU, and their initial response was... it'll take too long.
It'll take too long?
Yeah, it's a long process. Like, we're not familiar with that. We've been going through it for a year, you know, getting the approval for adoption. But actually, post-mortem, just 2 days ago, actually, I got an email back from somebody from the ACLU. And it was basically just saying that we can't divulge any information to you. It's all confidential, even though I only requested contact with the attorneys of Jane Doe.
Vince, so what does that tell you about anybody's seriousness about the argument of, well, you should adopt the child?
That it's not serious at all. It's funny because one of the other responses when I said that we were going through adoption was, why would you only want to adopt one or two? There's thousands of kids that need a home. Well, I can't take care of thousands of kids.
Yeah.
I can only take care of a couple more.
And
there's no serious about it.
I will tell you, Vince, as you know, as you're going through it, it is such an arduous process adopt, especially here in the United States. You're lucky you're in Texas. Rafe was Texas born as well. And the adoption papers are terrifying for the birth mother, because they are they're very, very clear. You're never going to see this child again. And you have nothing to do with this child. You are no longer have any rights at all. And they make it very clear. But in a lot of states, you just don't know. So you adopt here in America, and somebody can come and claim your child 3 years, 5 years after. And yeah, it's terrifying.
Mm-hmm. It is.
Vince, thank you so much for sharing that. And good luck on your adoption. Does it look like it's all going to come? I mean, you don't have peculiar smells coming from anywhere in the house?
No, flesh-coated
blow-up dolls?
Whatever that,
yeah, right, okay.
Yeah. Everything should be good to go in the next one.
Okay, good, good, good. Vince, congratulations. Thank you so much. Hey, are you looking to buy or sell your home? You want to buy a brand new home, maybe you're moving someplace else and you don't have any idea where to start and find an agent? Well, let us help you out. Real Estate Agents I Trust. RealEstateAgentsITrust.com. You can go there and you can find yourself an agent. If you are living in a house now and you want to sell it on time and for the most amount of money, these are the guys to help you out. There is over 1,000 agents all over America who are just like you. Their bond is their word. They're fans of this show. They share our sensibilities. You know, they want the seller to get a good deal. They want the buyer to get a good deal. They want a good deal all around. And if that's what you're looking for, these agents are great. They're all fully vetted and handpicked by my team for their knowledge, their skill, their track record. We have been looking into this industry for a long time. It started out, me and my brother, just in out of frustration. It doesn't have to be this hard. And as it turns out, no, it doesn't. You just have to find the right real estate agent. So that's what we're doing. We're just putting you in touch with the right real estate agent in your area or the area that you're moving to. Somebody that you know you can trust and has the same sensibility that you do. RealEstateAgentsITrust.com. It's RealEstateAgentsITrust.com.
Glenn Beck. Glenn Beck.
Now, we have to take the beam out of our own eye first. So let me do something that's probably really not popular. I don't know if you saw the story from Fox News about Jake Tapper and Allah Akbar, where he said it's beautiful and they, you know, deemed it outrageous that he would say those things. And then he took to Twitter and is like, I can't tell the difference between InfoWars and Fox anymore. You know, what are the lies here? This was an InfoWars story. Fox picked it up. And it's a total lie. Yes, he did say that Allah Akbar can be beautiful, meaning it can be beautiful. I think he even went in and said with weddings and things like that, it can also be terrifying. Well, yeah. Yeah. I think the same thing could be said about, you know, just the name Jesus. Can be beautiful. You know, the word God can be beautiful. God hates whoever.
Yeah.
No, then it's ugly.
You could take the name in vain.
Yes. Right? Yes.
And so that seemed to be the only point he was making. It was not making it. It was beautiful in the context of this terrorist attack.
Yeah.
That was not what he was saying.
And again, InfoWars picked it up. And for some reason, Fox News picked up on the InfoWars story. And
Jason Chaffetz said it on the air. But Fox News did delete the tweet. Jason Chaffetz did apologize for doing it because, you know, they eventually
wrong.
Got the word that it was incorrect.
Right. And I don't know how we can be a people that really liked Jake Tapper And we all said, here's a guy who actually is trying to do the right thing. And he holds both sides, the feet to the fire. And look what he did during the, he was the only guy, or one of,
yeah, very few,
probably maybe five, that actually stood in the media and fought against the Obama administration. You're not supposed to like reporters. They're supposed to ask the tough questions of both sides. And he did for 8 years. One of the only that did for 8 years. Yeah,
the Obama administration hated the guy. Him. They couldn't stand him.
Hated him. That to me should be a badge of honor that he wears. That both sides hate him. That's good. Mm-hmm. That tells me you're not playing favorites. And how we've gone from a group of people that saw him as really a hero, a guy who stood up, and we said, at least I did, he's a hero. Only because he's doing his job and nobody else seems to be doing his job. Well, he's still doing his job. Stop it. Stop it. If he does stuff that is true, you know, and he goes off, if he really had said, you know, that's beautiful when he got out and said that over the bodies of the dead children, well, then it would be something that would be outrageous and we should talk about.
Yeah.
But that's not what he said.
And certainly, I'm sure he wouldn't even say he's perfect. That there are times that I definitely disagree with some of his analysis.
Yeah,
but there are a lot of times he stands up, even in really uncomfortable times, for what he believes is right. I will say this from the beginning, he's always been really behind the military, and you know, I deserves credit for that.
I think he's fair. I think he's fair. Both sides hate him for a reason.
Glenn Beck. You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
Well, I've saved this only because Pat is about to start on his thing. And just to get him all excited, we wanted to talk about Bitcoin. Because we've all been talking about for how long? Since somebody sent us something from 2012.
2014 it was.
2014, yeah. Where we were talking about it. And dumbly, you know, our stupidity was just so thick at the time. We were saying, you know, you should really invest in Bitcoin. And none of us did. None of us did.
I don't know if none of us is the right term. I don't know.
Stu did. Stu invested at 300, right?
Yeah.
Shut up.
Bought some at 300.
Shut up.
Well, you know.
So I invested at 1,100 and felt really skittish about it. I was just like, oh man, $1,100, and that's a lot. It hit 73 today.
Yeah, 7,300.
That's unbelievable.
And you have to be clear on Bitcoin. It wasn't just 73.
Oh, yeah, 7,300. Because it could be $73. It could be
$73 tomorrow.
Yeah.
There's no question about it. And I guess if any of us were smart, we would have actually invested real money in it instead of like play.
Yeah.
But who knows? I mean, you never know what tomorrow brings with this stuff. But it's,
yeah, tomorrow it could be out of business. I don't think it will be,
well,
but it could be out of business.
Who was the guy that we had on a few months ago, and he said, it could be $1 million a coin, or it could be zero.
Yeah.
And that's why you should own at least one. Because if it's $1 million a coin and you bought in now, you've done really well.
You'd be up. You'd be up in that scenario.
Well, yeah. We just had a big institutional investor guy on earlier. Was it this week or last week? And he said he predicted that it would be at 6,000 last spring. And it was when we talked to him, it was like at 6,300. And he said he was predicting 6,000 by the year 2018. And he explained why, you know, there's only 4 million investors in this worldwide now.
That's what I find to be incredible.
That's incredible.
And 4 million investors have over $100 of Bitcoin. You know, so there's a lot of accounts that have like 12 cents. You know what I mean? But like this is when he talks $100. Which is, by the way, 1/70th of a Bitcoin. 1/70th. So it's not a lot of money. It's not a lot, you know, a big chunk.
But just
there's
a bet.
Yeah. I mean, there's only.
But you put $100 now in and it goes to, you know, $1 million. You've made some real money.
Because
I've heard a lot of people say that, you know, you're too late. But I mean, you're talking about less than 0.1% of the population has $100 in this. So, I mean, and when you go to like $10,000. Which is like, you know, like a big, you know, that's 2 Bitcoins. When you go to 2 Bitcoins, you're at like 1/100th of a percent. So I think really the only thing that would stop you from getting into this is if you hear that Pat got into it. Because if Pat gets into it,
then it's over.
It's going to zero almost immediately.
so you have no intention of investing today, do you?
No, I'm thinking about it.
No, don't think about it.
Shouldn't.
Of course, I've been thinking about it since it was 1100.
Right. So today is the day to continue to buy. So listen, here's the thing. We just want to say, because we got so much email on this yesterday. The way to buy it, I buy it through Zapo, and I do it because it keeps it in a Swiss bank in the mountain. This was an American company. They had it over in Silicon Valley. They didn't like the way the United States was starting to, you know, just say, you know what? Hey, we can just take this. And so they moved their vault into the side of a mountain in Switzerland. And I like that because I have the, you know, the double whammy of I don't believe in the currency, but I also don't believe in the government not taking the money. And so it's harder to invest. And there are different standards because of that. But it's XAPO. Those are the people that I invest with. I don't we don't get any money for this, by the way.
Yeah.
And Stu, you use Coinbase.
Coinbase. And we should point out that none of us are experts at this at all. You should do your own homework, your own research. Like I even when you're investing in this is all, you know, we don't know what we're talking about on this as you
might know. I don't put anything in you don't want to lose.
Yeah. And this
is fun money.
Yeah. I will say like both of the companies, Coinbase is one, it's an American company as well. And it's backed by very large venture capital.
Yeah. Andreessen Horowitz.
Yeah. It's Silicon Valley type. So there's a lot of money behind it. Really powerful people are, you know, run it and are behind it, which is one of the reasons I liked it. Because I felt more stable, but this is a new thing for, as I pointed out, it's less than 0.1% of the world is involved in this right now. And so many people think they're so late to it. Really, so far you're not. I mean, you're still among the very first adopters if you were to get in now. And who knows what's going to happen to it. As Glenn has said many times, you should only use money that you like absolutely could lose tomorrow and don't care about. But it's an interesting thing if you have a few bucks.
Everyone
around
in this audience should own $100.
Again, we are not investment advisors, and we cannot.
No,
invest
I'm just saying, it's foolish.
Course,
it's foolish to not just roll the dice with $100. It's just foolish. If it went to $100,000 a Bitcoin, I mean,
that would be nice.
We remind you in X number of years if it ever hit that, and we were like, remember when we said it was 1100 and we first said it, we didn't take our own advice at 200 and then it was 73 and we said just put 100 in. Now it's 100,000 a Bitcoin.
Yeah.
And who knows? It could go to zero.
Right. If Pat gets in, it's going to go to zero. We all know that.
Lose $100.
Yeah. I mean, that's guaranteed. The minute I get in,
it will go down.
So yeah. That's, I think, the leading indicator of whether you're investing.
You know, so far, you're okay. I'm not in.
So Pat is here because he has a problem with the propaganda that Stu was spilling out about the tax plan from the Republicans.
Stu Ryan, is it? Stu McConnell?
No.
Is it?
No, I don't. I don't think so. No,
the Republican spin on that was great.
What are you talking
about? Oh, this isn't so bad. And
I said it's a mortgage deduction
that should go away.
Oh, I think that should go away. But that has nothing to do with Republicans.
Of course it should to you, Mr. Renter. Former renter.
Former renter. But it's a terrible incentive, I think.
Yeah, I think. But it's there. And now.
Yes. And now it screws people who already have it.
Yeah.
Like me, by the way.
Yes.
But I
don't like that. And quite honestly, Pat, I mean, I was looking at this tax thing. Do you know how bad it could have been?
Right.
They were talking about, you know, and we're going to phase out the corporate tax. I mean, this thing could have been. We're so far away from this passing, and it's bad as the starting place.
It's terrible.
But it could have been worse.
Starting place. But it could have been. It should have been so much better.
Yes.
Should have been so much better. They should be getting rid of the estate tax this minute. Mm-hmm. It's immoral.
Yes.
It's outrageous. The government has no business taking money from you after you die once they tax that all your life. They don't have any business having any of it. And they're going to. They're going to continue to. And, you know, for the $1 million rate to stay at 39.6 is a cop-out as well.
Incredible.
Yeah, you're just a coward. Yes. You're just a coward. You can't defend yourself. You don't know why you believe the things you believe. And with Republicans like this, who needs Democrats? Well, you've got them. They're both. They're all Democrats. It doesn't matter anymore.
Yeah, I mean, I think it will result in most people paying less in taxes. So from that perspective, I'm glad it's not
better
more
than where we are.
But it still sucks.
When it comes to taxes,
terrible.
You know, when it came to Obamacare, I was reluctantly on the it's better than where we are. But
I know
that's when taxes, anything that makes it go down, I'm for. I'm not happy about it because it should have gone a lot better than this. But anything that goes down and goes down permanently, I'm for.
Okay, Glenn McConnell.
You believe this guy?
Right.
Wait a minute, Pat. You were just saying it was McConnell.
I didn't like being on that side of it. Okay.
It's not fun, is it? No, it's not fun. Have you guys looked into the 470,000 Osama files?
A little bit. Only a little bit.
Only the Charlie bit my finger off, or bit my finger.
The Charlie bit your finger?
Yeah, do you remember the video of the cute little kids from Great Britain?
Yes.
And they were like, Charlie bit my finger.
He had that
video. And they talked to the dad, and the dad was like,
that's unbelievable.
I don't know what to say. It's pretty hard to think that he was planning things like September 11th and then watching my kids.
It's fantastic. Yeah. I hadn't heard that.
Yeah.
But they got they also found the 228 pages of his personal handwritten journal, which they've released some of the entries now. This was dated January 21st, 2003. Dear diary, I've fallen in love with my goat. My sheep are jealous. In time, they'll get over it. July 14th, 2005, just a couple years later.
Yeah.
Dear diary, praise Allah. I found 8 more bugs in my beer today. I will not go to bed hungry tonight.
That's nice.
And then a few years later, I don't know what happened in between, but from April 26th, 2010, very soon I will be retiring from terrorism. It's time for me to devote full time to selling facial cream with the infidel Joanna Gaines.
Wow. Well, hopefully we'll get a little bit more from that diary on Pat Gray Unleashed coming up on the Blaze Radio and TV networks in just a few moments.
With a recent breach of credit bureaus, people don't know what to do. And taking half measures is not going to protect you against the identity fraud threat that is arising from data breaches. Here's what happens. Data breachers, the hackers go in and they take maybe your social security number, your birthday, or, you know, a driver's license. They have partial information. They go to the dark web. They join that information with somebody else that has other information that augments that. They put it together like a puzzle. Now they can do anything. They can commit crimes in your name. They can steal from your 401k. They can buy houses in your name. And they can do that with your children's social security number for a long, long time before your children go to get a social security number, or go to put money into a bank, and they realize my credit's been destroyed. LifeLock. They use proprietary technology to detect a wide range of identity theft. And if there is a problem, a U.S.-based identity restoration specialist is going to work to fix it. Now, nobody can prevent all identity theft, monitor all transactions at all businesses, but LifeLock can help you see more threats to your identity. So go to LifeLock.com, call 1-800-LIFELOCK, use the promo code BECK, 10% off your LifeLock membership, promo code BECK, LifeLock.com, save 10%, use promo code BECK.
Glenn Beck. Glenn Beck.
So I'm not a sports fan, obviously. I got my rest this week. Game 7 last night. Everybody I know says is one of the greatest World Series of all time.
Yeah.
And the Astros won, which is not making the people in Dallas very happy. The Astros won, and I find this part of the story really fascinating. Baseball's Great Experiment. Now, this is a Sports Illustrated cover from 2014. Unprecedented look at how a franchise is going beyond Moneyball to build the game's next big thing, your 2017 World Series champs. And on the cover is George Springer. Now, this is 3 years ago.
3 years ago. They were, by the way, at the time, the worst team in baseball. And had lost over 100 games. We're changing this around. And the top baseball's Great Experiment. They were trying something completely new. So last night, of course, the Astros win the World Series in 2017. So the new cover this week is the exact same as it was in 2014. Baseball's Great Experiment, your 2017 World Series champs. It's about the Astros. The same player is on the cover, just an updated picture, because George Springer won the MVP of the World Series. So, I mean, you want to talk about calling it.
So we should get the author of that story on. Yeah. Was this their stated goal? With the Astros saying, we're going to rebuild? Was it like Moneyball and we're going to rebuild it? And we plan on being, you know, we plan on being in the World Series in 2017. Or was this the author saying, look at what they're doing? This is going to put them in the World Series.
I think it was, I don't think, you know, they wouldn't promise they were going to be, but I think they were looking at it as a 3-year plan or whatever. And it happened. And beyond the coolness of that, you know, cover, you also have the situation of just like, how could you not root for Houston after what they've been through this year? You know what I mean? Like, I think you're right. Like, Dallas have a little bit of a rivalry. They wanted the Rangers to win before the Astros and all of that. But it's like, with what they've gone through this year,
it's great.
It's impossible to root against them unless you're a Dodgers fan. Yeah. And, of course, you know, it sucks for the Dodgers because they haven't won in a while either. But, I mean, we had three great World Series in a row.
How are the ratings?
Good, actually. Really good. The ratings, I didn't see the number for this game, but I think they did 22 million for game 6, which is a huge number.
That's a huge number, especially now.
Game 7, as far as a game went, was not the greatest game in the world. It was, 5-0 pretty early and ended at 5-1. But
I don't
still,
even think I know how to find, I don't think I even know how to find the local affiliates on TV anymore. I just never use my TV like that.
Yeah, well, and you're not a sports fan. And really, like a lot of people, I think it's only live sports that you use it for.
Yeah.
But it's interesting because they had a story that came out about the NFL as well. Everyone's talking about the NFL ratings being down.
Yeah. They are down. Yeah. However, all of television is down.
Yeah, this is interesting. I hadn't seen this. NFL is down 5% overall from the same time last year. Troubling drop for the biggest ratings powerhouse on TV, but it seems less dire when you consider that the four major networks are down an average of 8%. So they're down 8, and then the NFL is only down 5%.
So that's outpacing.
Yeah, it's actually down more. And I think that's, ESPN is dropping subscribers like crazy. We were talking about this the other day. They've lost 15,000 subscribers a day. They're talking about losing. I mean, how much money that is. It's incredible. But on the other side of that, it's like, is that partially because they become an annoying left-wing situation? Well, is the NFL partially because of the kneeling? I think that's probably true at some level. But I mean, when you look at the grand scheme of things, like, people aren't canceling their entire cable subscription because they don't like, the opinions
right,
on ESPN.
But are they, you might be if that's the only reason you really have it.
Yeah.
And is ESPN growing anyplace else?
I mean, certainly their digital stuff's growing, but it's hard to grow it at the same pace. I mean,
15,000 a day.
Yeah.
I mean, the cable business, that's a hemorrhage.
If you can get into it and you can be successful in it, it's really, really good. But those things are changing and there are huge amounts of money on the line because there's these long-term contracts that have already existed. But congratulations to the Astros, man. That was great to watch.
It's good to see Houston. Have a good night.
Glenn Beck.